bright-eyed as a toddler, looking frankly at the camera on his fifth birthday, more hobbity than ever during grade school, with his t-shirt tucked over his tummy into his maroon tough skins and his shaggy 70s hair. By middle school, he'd started standing with his feet planted and his shoulders slightly forward. Not daring you to knock him down, he wasn't that kind of short guy. Just looking like someone who couldn't be knocked down. By high school, he was broad and steely, an immovable object. Georgie sat on the couch, looking through the albums, and Neil sat next to her, idly playing with her hair. He'd seen all these pictures before. She stopped at a photo of Neil and Dawn dressed up for some high school dance. Jesus, they really were right out of a John Cougar Mellencamp video. Yeah, he said. But still.
Still what?
Georgie smoothed the plastic over the photo.
He was your dad.
She looked away from high school Neil, up at the Neil sitting next to her. Neil at 25. Softer than in high school, with less tension around his eyes, looking like he'd probably kiss her in a minute when he was done making whatever point he was making.
What?
Georgie asked.
I just don't understand how you could skip your father's funeral.
He didn't feel like my father, she said. Neil waited for her to elaborate. He was only married to my mom for 10 minutes. I don't remember living with him, and he moved to Michigan when I was 4.
Didn't you miss him?
I didn't know what I was missing.
But didn't you miss something? Like, even the idea of him?
Georgie shrugged. I guess not. I never felt incomplete or anything, if that's what you're asking. I think fathers must be kind of optional.
That is a fundamentally wrong statement.
Oh, you know what I mean. Georgie went back to the photo album. There were dozens of photos from Neil's graduation day. He looked pained in these, like after 18 years he'd finally lost patience with his mom's photo vigilance. His dad was in nearly every photo, too, looking much more tolerant.
I really don't know what you mean,
Neil said. Georgie turned the page. Well, they're nice if you have one, if you have a good one, but dads aren't necessary. Neil sat up straighter, away from her.
They're absolutely necessary.
They must not be, she said, turning toward him on the couch. I didn't have one. Neil's eyebrows were grim and his mouth was flat.
That doesn't mean you didn't need one.
But I didn't need one. I didn't have one and I'm fine.
You're not fine.
I am so, she said. How am I not fine? He shook his head.
I don't know.
You're being uncharacteristically irrational, Georgie said.
I'm not being irrational. No one else in the world would argue with me about this. Dads aren't optional. My dad wasn't optional.
Because he was there, she said. But if he wasn't there, your mom would have filled in the gaps. That's what moms do.
Georgie.
He pulled his arm away from her shoulders and hair.
You're being warped.
She hugged the photo album against herself. How am I being warped? I'm just sitting here being the product of a perfectly well-adjusted single-parent family.
Your mom isn't well-adjusted.
Well, that's true. Maybe kids don't need moms either. She was teasing now. Neil wasn't. He stood up from the couch, shaking his head some more. Neil. He walked toward the stairs, away from her. Why are you getting so mad about this? She said. We don't even have kids. He stopped halfway up the stairs. He had to lean down below the ceiling to make eye contact with her.
Because we don't even have kids, and you already think I'm optional.
Not you, she said, not wanting to admit she was wrong, not really wanting to sort out what she did mean. Men in general. Neil stood up again, out of sight.
I can't talk to you right now. I'm going upstairs to help with dinner.
Georgie pushed the photo album back down into her lap and flipped to the end.
Where are you flying today?
The woman behind the counter asked without looking up at Georgie. Omaha.
Last name?
Georgie spelled out McCool, and the woman started clacking at her console. She frowned.
Do you have your reservation number with you?
I don't have one, Georgie said. I need one. That's why I'm here. The ticket agent looked up at Georgie. She was a black woman in her late 50s, early 60s. Her hair was pulled up into a bun, and she was eyeing Georgie over a pair of gold-framed reading glasses.
You don't have a ticket?
Not yet, Georgie said. She'd walked up to the first counter she came to. She didn't know if this airline even flew to Omaha. Can I get one here?
Yes. You want to fly out today?
As soon as possible.
It's Christmas Eve, the woman said.
I know, Georgie nodded. The woman, her name tag said Estelle, raised her eyebrows, then looked back down at her console, clacking away again.
You want to get to Omaha, she said.
Yes.
Tonight?
Yes. She clacked some more. Every once in a while, she'd make a discontented, humming noise. Georgie shifted on her feet and rattled her keys against her leg. She'd already forgotten where she'd parked. The ticket agent, Estelle, walked away and picked up a phone that was attached to the wall. It seemed like a special phone. There was an orange light built into the wall above it. Now that's what a magic phone should look like, Georgie thought. Then Estelle came back to her clackety-clack console. All right. She sighed after a minute. Georgie licked her lips. They were chapped, but she didn't have any lip balm.
I can get you to Denver tonight on United. From there, you're just going to have to cross your fingers. We've got delays across the system.
I'll take it, Georgie said. Thank you.
Don't thank me, Estelle told her. I'm the lady who's about to get you stranded in the Denver airport on Christmas Eve. ID?
Georgie handed over her driver's license and credit card. The ticket was exorbitantly expensive, but Georgie didn't blink.
You could fly to Singapore for this much, Estelle said. Non-stop. Do you have anything to check?
No, Georgie said. Estelle held her hand over a printer, waiting for the tickets.
What's in Omaha, anyway, besides 2 feet of snow?
My kids, Georgie said, then felt her heart squeeze. My husband. The other woman's face softened for the first time since Georgie had stepped up to the counter. She handed Georgie her boarding passes.
Well, I hope you get there sooner than later. Hurry up, you've got 20 minutes to get to your gate.
For the next 20 minutes, Georgie felt like the heroine of a romantic comedy. She even decided what song would be playing on her soundtrack, Kenny Loggins doing a big, triumphant, live version of Celebrate Me Home, slow and gentle at the beginning, building up to an irresistible crescendo, excessive amounts of blue-eyed soul. She ran through the airport, no luggage to drag, no kids to hang on to. She ran by other people's families, by loving elderly couples, by volunteer carolers wearing red and green sweaters. With every step, Georgie felt more sure of herself. This was what she should have done 10 minutes after Neil left last week. Flying across the country to reunite with your true love was always the right move. Always. In every case. Everything would be all right if Georgie could just get to Neil, if she could hear his voice, if she could feel his arms around her. Just like everything had been all right when he'd showed up on her doorstep 15 years ago, tomorrow morning. As soon as she'd seen his face that day, she'd forgiven him. Her plane was already boarding when Georgie, flushed and breathless, arrived at the gate. A pretty blonde flight attendant took her ticket and smiled. Have a great flight, and Merry Christmas. Chapter 32. The plane didn't take off. Everyone got buckled up. They turned off their electronic devices. The pretty flight attendant told them which exit to head for in case of catastrophe or near certain death. Then the plane taxied for a few minutes. Then a few minutes more. There was 20 minutes, probably, of taxiing. Georgie was sitting between an extremely polished and sanded woman who tensed every time Georgie brushed her thigh, and a boy about Alice's age, wearing a "This sucks" t-shirt. He was way too young to watch Jeffed Up, in Georgie's opinion. "So you like Trev?" she asked him.
"Who?"
"Your t-shirt." The kid shrugged and turned on his phone. A minute later, the flight attendant came by and asked him to turn it off. After 40 minutes of taxiing, Georgie realized the boy was the uptight tan woman's son. She kept leaning over Georgie to talk to him. "Would you like to trade seats?" Georgie asked her. "I always leave an empty seat between us," the woman said. "Usually that means we end up with extra space because nobody wants to sit by themselves in the middle."
"Did you want to sit together?" Georgie asked.
"I don't mind moving."
"No," the woman answered. "Better stay where we are. They use the seat assignments to identify bodies."
The captain came on the intercom to apologize because he couldn't turn the air conditioning on and to tell them to just
hang in there. We're fifth in line to take off.
Then he came back to say they weren't in line anymore. They were waiting for news from Denver. "What's happening in Denver?" Georgie asked the flight attendant the next time she stopped to tell the boy to turn off his phone.
"Snowpocalypse," the flight attendant said cheerfully.
"It's snowing?" Georgie asked. "Doesn't it always snow in Denver?"
"It's a blizzard, from Denver to Indianapolis."
"But we're still leaving?"
"The storm is shifting," the flight attendant said. "We're just waiting for confirmation. Then we'll take off."
"Oh," Georgie said. "Thanks." The plane returned to the gate, then taxied out again. Georgie watched the boy play a video game until his phone died. All the tension and adrenaline she'd felt in the airport drained out through her feet. She was hungry and sad. She slumped forward in her seat so she wouldn't brush against the woman next to her. Georgie kept thinking about her last phone conversation with Neil, their last fight. Then she started wondering if it might actually be their last fight. If she'd scared him away from proposing, wouldn't it erase all the fights they'd had since? By the time the captain came back with good news,
"We've got a window,"
Georgie'd run out of urgency. "This is purgatory," she thought. "Between places, between times, completely out of touch." Everyone around her cheered. Georgie wasn't a good flyer. Neil always held her hand during takeoff and turbulence. Now that there were too many people in their family to sit in one row, they'd sit across from each other, two and two, Georgie and Neil in both aisle seats, so he could take her hand if he needed to. Sometimes he didn't even look up from his crossword, just reached out for her when the plane started to shake. Georgie always tried not to look scared, for the girl's sake, but she always was scared. If she made a noise or took too sharp of a breath, Neil would squeeze her hand and look up at her.
"Hey, sunshine, this is nothing. Look at the stewardess over there. She's dozing. We'll be fine."
Georgie's plane ran into turbulence an hour into the flight to Denver. The woman sitting next to her wasn't bothered by it, except for when the lurching shifted Georgie's hips into hers. Her son had already fallen asleep against Georgie's right side. Georgie leaned against him, clenched her fists, and closed her eyes. She tried to imagine Neil driving through this blizzard to get to her. But there was no blizzard in 1998. And maybe Neil wasn't trying to get to her. She tried again to remember what she'd said to him last night on the phone. She tried to remember what he'd said back. Neil probably thought she was a maniac. She should have just told him about the magic phone, full disclosure. Then they could have solved it together,
They could have Sherlocked and Holmesed it from both ends of the timeline. Or Neil could have figured it all out. He was the Sherlock and the Holmes in their relationship. The plane heaved, and Georgie pressed her head back into her seat, forcing herself to hear Neil's voice. "It's nothing. We'll be fine." The sun was setting in Denver. The plane circled and shook for 45 minutes before there was a break in the storm they could land through. When she finally stepped out onto the jetway, Georgie was sure she was going to throw up, but the feeling quickly passed. It was cold in the tunnel. She hurried by the untouchable lady and her son and got out her boarding pass for Omaha. Georgie'd missed her next flight, but there had to be another one. Omaha was the biggest city between Denver and Chicago. Neil said so. She took a few confused steps into the airport. The gate was so full. People were sitting on the floor, leaning against the windows. Every gate up and down the concourse was full. Georgie needed to get to the other side of the terminal. She found a people mover and walked quickly. It felt like time was moving faster for her than for other people she was passing. No one else seemed to be in a hurry, and most of the shops were shuttered and dark, even though it was only 6. Christmas Eve, she thought. And then, snowpocalypse. When she got to her gate, every seat was taken. People were standing around a muted TV, watching the Weather Channel. There was a sign over the desk with 3 flight numbers, all delayed. Technically, she hadn't missed her flight, because it had never taken off. Georgie got in line, just to make sure that staying put was her best bet to get to Omaha. When she finally got to the desk, the airline employee was surprisingly upbeat.
"Your best bet is to apparate."
"Sorry?"
"Just a little Harry Potter humor," he said.
"Right." Georgie hadn't read the Harry Potter books, but she'd gone to see most of the movies with Seth on days when he felt like getting out of the office. She didn't care about wizards, but she thought Alan Rickman was dreamy.
"When did you start lusting after middle-aged guys?" Seth asked.
"When I became middle-aged."
"Rein it in, Georgie. We're still 30-somethings."
"God, I loved that show."
"I know," he said.
"That's proof that I'm middle-aged," she said. "I miss 30-something." The Starbucks next to her gate was closed, and the McDonald's, and the Jamba Juice. Georgie bought a turkey sandwich from one vending machine and an iPhone charger from another. She got terrible coffee at the only place that was open, a Western-themed sports bar, then walked back to the gate and found a spot against the wall to lean against. The glass behind her was cold. Georgie squinted out the window. She couldn't see anything. No snow, nothing more than shadows. But she could hear the wind. It sounded like she was still in the airplane. Across from her, a woman was breaking a cookie in half and splitting it between her kids. 2 girls small enough to share a seat. They had napkins folded in their laps and boxes of milk. The woman was sitting next to her husband, and his arm hung lazily over the back of her chair, stroking her shoulder absently. Georgie wanted to move closer to them. She wanted to brush crumbs from the littlest girl's coat. She wanted to talk to them. "I have this too," she'd say to the woman. "This exactly." But did she, still? Georgie kept testing herself, cataloging her memories, tracing them backwards. Alice's 7th birthday, Numi's 1st Disneyland Halloween, Neil mowing the lawn, Neil getting frustrated in traffic, Neil shifting toward her in his sleep when Georgie had insomnia.
"You okay?"
"Can't sleep."
"Come here, crazy."
Neil teaching Alice how to make Jiffy Pop, Neil doodling a sleepy gerbil on Georgie's arm. Georgie could never remember the difference between a gerbil, a hamster, and a guinea pig, so Neil had taken to drawing them on her when he was bored.
"Cheat sheet," he'd say, writing, "I am a guinea pig," in a word balloon on her elbow.
She ran her hand up over her blank arm. The little girl across from her knocked over her milk. Georgie leaned in and caught it. The mother smiled at her, and Georgie smiled back. "I have this too," Georgie's smile said. She missed her girls. She wanted to see them. There were photos on her phone. Georgie scanned the gate for an outlet and found one on the wall a few feet down. Two people were already plugged in. She walked over and asked if she could charge when they were done. "I just need a minute," she said, "just to check something."
"Go ahead,"
a 20-something boy said. He was Neil's age, 1998 Neil. The boy unplugged his phone and moved a few inches away to give her room. Georgie knelt down awkwardly between him and a woman who was typing on her laptop. She broke open the new charger and dug her phone out of her pocket, then plugged it in and waited for the white apple to appear. Nothing happened.
"Has it been dead a while?"
the boy asked.
"Sometimes it takes a few minutes."
Georgie waited a few minutes. She plugged and unplugged it at both ends. She pushed the two buttons. A tear fell onto the screen. Hers, obviously.
"Do you want to use my phone?"
the boy asked. "No, that's okay," Georgie said. "Thanks." She unplugged her phone and stood up, rocking backwards awkwardly once she was on her feet. She turned away, then back. "Actually, yeah. Could I use your phone?"
"Sure."
He held it up to her. Georgie took the phone and dialed Neil's cell phone number. "We're sorry. This mailbox is full." She gave the kid back his phone. "Thanks." Her spot on the wall by the little girls was gone. A woman was sitting there now with a toddler. Georgie checked the sign over the desk again. Still delayed. One of the other flights had been canceled. She walked away from the gate and dropped her phone in the trash. Then she thought better of it and reached into the trash can to get it back. It was right on top. Airport trash is relatively clean. An older man wearing a big puffy jacket watched her. She tried to wave her phone around so that he wouldn't think she was digging for food. Then she shoved it in her pocket and walked over to the people mover. She rode it as far as she could in one direction, then came all the way back, then got on again. Just because Georgie couldn't see the photos of her kids on her phone didn't mean that the photos weren't still there. Just because she couldn't see the photos of her kids on her phone didn't mean that her kids weren't still there. Somewhere. Numi's bed with a dozen stuffed kitties. Alice's paper dolls. Numi chewing on her pigtail, Neil pulling it out of her mouth. Numi chewing on her other pigtail. Neil tying her pigtails in a knot on top of her head. Neil in the kitchen. Neil making hot chocolate. Neil making Thanksgiving dinner. Neil standing by the stove when Georgie got home late from work.
"I wasn't sure what you wanted to pack, but I washed everything in your hamper. Don't forget that it's cold there. You always forget that it's cold."
If Georgie could just look at her photos, she'd feel better. If she just had a little proof, not that she needed proof, but if she could just have a little proof that they were still there. She rubbed her naked ring finger. She emptied her pockets for signs of life. All she had was a credit card and a driver's license, both in her maiden name. It got darker in the airport. Airports are always dark at night, and this one was even darker with all the sleeping storefronts and the snow. Georgie could still hear the wind, even though she was nowhere near the windows now. The whole building keened with it. At some point, she stepped off the people mover. The ground was too still beneath her, and she staggered. When she recovered her bearings, she went to the nearest bathroom and stood in front of the full-length mirror. As soon as the room was mostly empty, she lifted up her t-shirt and ran her hand along the stretch marks and the ropey scar under her belly. Still there. Chapter 33. Georgie knew there was something wrong because she'd been through this once before, and that time the baby had come right out. With Alice, there'd been an incision, then a slippery pull, like someone had just hooked a wide-mouthed bass and yanked it out of Georgie's guts. Then a nurse had rushed away with the baby, Georgie thanking God for the screams. The slow part, after Alice, had been putting Georgie back together again. Neil told her that the doctors actually took out her uterus and set it on her stomach, then poked around inside her abdomen to make sure everything checked out. Neil had been sitting right next to her that day, when Alice was born. He was sitting right next to her now. Georgie's hands were strapped to her side, and he was holding one. Georgie knew something was wrong this time because the incision happened, and she felt the pressure of the doctor's hands inside her, but then there was no baby. There was no rush of movement. The nurse who was supposed to take the baby away stood tensely behind the doctor and the intern and the two medical students, empty-handed. Georgie knew that something was wrong because of the tension in Neil's jaw, because of the way he was watching everyone. She felt more pressure inside, more hands, more than just two. The anesthesiologist kept talking to her in a low murmur, "You're doing just fine, Mom, you're doing great." Like it took special talent to lie still on the table. Maybe it did. She was poking Georgie's chest with a toothpick. "Can you feel this?" "Yes." "Can you feel this?" "No." "It might feel like you can't breathe," the anesthesiologist said. "But you can. Just keep breathing, Mom." They were all talking now, doctors and nurses. Everything that came out of their mouths was numbers. The table suddenly ratcheted upwards so that Georgie was lying at a mild incline, her head toward the floor. "This isn't good," she thought calmly, looking up at the lights. It seemed smart to stay calm in this situation, with her body wide open, her blood pumping who knows where. She could see someone's arm reflected in the light fixture above her. The sleeve was red. Then Neil squeezed Georgie's hand. He'd turned away from the doctors and the place where the baby was supposed to be, and was hovering over Georgie's shoulder. His jaw was tense, but his eyes were fierce and open. Maybe this was why Neil always had his guard up. His eyes, unguarded, could burn tunnels through mountains. Georgie kept breathing. "In, out, in, out. You're doing great, Mom," the anesthesiologist hummed. Georgie knew she was lying. Neil's eyes were pouring fire on her. If he always looked at Georgie like this, it'd be uncomfortable. If he always looked at her like this, maybe she'd never look away. But she'd never doubt that he loved her. How could she ever doubt that he loved her? Neil was saying goodbye to her with that look. He was begging her to stay. He was telling her that she was doing fine. "Just keep breathing, Georgie." How could she ever doubt that he loved her, when loving her was what he did better than all the things he did beautifully? The anesthesiologist pushed a plastic mask onto Georgie's mouth. Georgie didn't look away from Neil. When she woke up later that night in a recovery room, she realized that she hadn't expected to. There was a hospital bassinet pulled close to her bed, and Neil was asleep in the chair. Chapter 34. The airport had brought out cots and laid them in the hallway between gates. It looked like an army field hospital. Georgie didn't feel like she could sleep in front of strangers like that, or at all, tonight. Though she wished she had a blanket. If any of the airport stores were open, she'd buy one of the giant blue and orange Broncos sweatshirts in the window displays. People were sleeping around her, too, in chairs and against the wall. They slept with their heads on their purses and their hands on their carry-ons, like they were worried about pickpockets. Georgie wasn't worried about pickpockets. She had nothing to steal. It must be late, or early. Georgie'd lost track of time completely. She kept checking her dead phone out of habit. The airport hadn't dimmed the lights, but it was still too dark to read without a book light. The wind seemed to be pushing the darkness into the terminal. There was a lull in the storm. Or maybe it was just dying down. Georgie didn't know how blizzards were supposed to end. There was a gate change, then another wait. Then she was boarding, only half conscious of which flight was hers and where it was going. "Omaha?" the flight attendant asked when Georgie stepped onto the plane. "Omaha," Georgie replied. The plane was only about 15 rows long, with just 2 seats across. She'd never been on a plane this small. She'd only heard about planes this small when they crashed. Georgie wondered if the pilots were as tired as she was. Why even bother taking off at this point, in the middle of the night, unless the flight crew was heading home too? Wednesday, Christmas Day, 2013. Chapter 35. The sun was rising when they left Denver, and now Omaha was a blinding white below them. Georgie gripped her armrests through the landing and stood up in her seat before the seatbelt light went off. She'd done it. She was here now. She was close. Alice, Numi, Neil. The Omaha airport seemed abandoned. The coffee shop was closed, and the little magazine stand. Always before, when Georgie'd walked past the security checkpoint, Neil's parents, or just his mom, had been waiting right there, in the little row of chairs. There was only one person sitting there today, a young woman in a heavy purple parka. She jumped out of her chair and started running toward Georgie. Then someone else ran past Georgie the other way, the boy from the Denver airport, who'd lent her his phone. The girl jumped into his arms, and he swung her in an ecstatic, lopsided circle. The joy of it hit Georgie like a shockwave. The boy's duffel bag fell to the ground. His face disappeared in the girl's long, wavy, dark hair. Georgie walked past them, holding her breath. "Keep moving. So close. It's almost over." The main terminal was empty except for the dozen or so people from Georgie's plane and a security guard. If the girls were here, Georgie would have let them run ahead. Alice could have even done cartwheels if she wanted. There was no one in the building to bother. Georgie started running down the escalator. She was close, so close. She ran to the exit and pushed through the revolving door, then stopped. Everything was covered in snow. Like on TV. The parking garage across the street looked like a gingerbread house topped with thick white icing. The snow looked as soft as icing, soft but almost furry. She pushed through the doors and stepped outside, feeling chilled through after her first inhale. Her t-shirt wasn't any protection from the cold. Her skin wasn't any protection. God, oh my God, have the girls seen this? Georgie leaned over an empty planter, pressing her hand into the snow, watching her fingers make 4 canyons. The snow was light, but kept its form. She moved her palm up, shaping a soft curve. She expected the snow to feel cold, but it didn't, not at first, not until it started to melt between her fingers. She'd brushed some onto her feet, and they were cold now, too. She tried stamping the snow off her ballet flats and looked up and down the drive for the taxi stand. There weren't even any cars. Georgie folded her arms and walked down the sidewalk, looking for a sign. "Can we help you find something?" someone said. Georgie turned. It was the ecstatic young couple, still hanging on to each other, as if neither of them could quite believe the other was finally here.
"Taxi stand?" Georgie said.
"You're looking for a taxi?"
the boy asked. The man. She should probably call him a man. He must be 22, 23. His hair was already thinning.
"Yeah," Georgie said.
"Did you call for one?"
Georgie was shivering, but she was trying not to let on. "No, should I call for one?" The boy looked at the girl.
"There aren't really taxis here," the girl said apologetically, but also like Georgie might be an idiot. "I mean, there are a few if you call ahead, but it's Christmas."
"Oh," Georgie said. "Right." She looked up and down the drive again. "Thanks."
"Do you need to use my phone?"
the boy offered.
"That's okay," Georgie said, running toward the door. "Thanks again."
She heard them talking quietly. She heard the boy say something about Joseph and Mary and no room at the inn.
"Hey, do you need a ride somewhere?"
he called out to Georgie. She looked back at them. The boy was grinning. The girl looked concerned. They were probably part of some fresh-faced Nebraska death cult who hung out at airports on holidays, picking up strays.
"Yes," she said. "Thank you."
"You don't have a bag?" the girl asked.
"No," Georgie said, then couldn't think of anything to say next that could possibly make her lack of a bag / coat / socks make sense.
"All right," the boy said. Georgie still couldn't call him a man. "Where to?"
"Ponca Hills," she said.
The boy turned to the girl. They were all sitting in the front of an old red truck, the girl squished in the middle. The heat didn't work, and the front windshield was already fogged over. He wiped it with the sleeve of his green canvas coat.
"That's out north," the girl said, taking out her phone. "What's the address?"
The address.
"Rainwood Road," Georgie said, relieved to remember even part of Neil's parents' address, then hoped that Rainwood Road didn't stretch the entire length of the city. The girl typed it into her phone.
"Okay," she said to the boy. "Turn right up here." Georgie wondered how long they'd been apart. The boy kept kissing the girl's head and squeezing her leg. Georgie looked out the window to give them privacy, and because the whole city looked like some sort of fairy wonderland, she'd never seen anything like it. The idea that this just fell from the sky and then looked like that, like Tinkerbell had painted it on. How did people ever get used to it? Georgie didn't realize at first that it must be difficult to drive in. They were moving slowly, but the truck still slid through a red light.
"I can't believe you drove in this," the boy said.
"I wasn't going to leave you at the airport," the girlfriend said. "I was careful."
He grinned and kissed her again. Georgie wondered if they were getting close to Neil's neighborhood. Almost no one else was on the road. A few people were out shoveling. They must be close. Georgie recognized that park, that bridge, that bowling alley. The girl gave the boy directions. Georgie recognized a pizza place that she and Neil had walked to.
"We're close," she said, leaning forward and resting a hand on the dash.
"Rainwood should be your next right," the girl said.
"Yeah,"
the boy agreed. But the truck stopped moving. His girlfriend looked up from her phone.
"Oh."
Georgie looked up the hill, but didn't see what the problem was. The boy sighed and scrubbed at his dirty blonde hair, then turned to Georgie.
"We might get halfway up that hill, but I'm not sure we'd get down, or out."
"Oh," Georgie said. "Well, it's close. I can walk from here. I know the way."
They both looked at her like she was crazy.
"You're not wearing a coat," he said.
"You're not even wearing shoes,"
the girl said.
I'll be fine, Georgie assured them. It's 5 blocks, tops. I won't freeze to death.
She said it like she knew something about freezing to death, which she clearly didn't.
Wait a minute.
The boy got out of the truck, then hopped back inside 30 seconds later with his duffel bag. He unzipped it, and clothes spilled out. He started heaping them in the girl's lap.
Here, he said, pulling out a thick gray wool sweater. Take this.
I can't take your sweater, Georgie said.
Take it. You can mail it back to me. My mom sews my address inside everything. Take it. It's no big deal.
Just take it, the girl said.
I'm trying to think if I have extra boots.
He shoved his clothes back into the bag.
I might have some waders in the back.
The girl rolled her eyes, and for a minute she looked just like Heather.
Or, why don't you tell me where you're going? He said to Georgie. I'll run up to the house and come back with your shoes and your coat or whatever.
No, Georgie said. She pulled the sweater on over her head. You've done enough, thank you.
You can't walk through the snow barefoot, he insisted.
I'll be fine. Georgie opened the passenger door. He opened his door, too. Oh, for Christ's sake, the girl said. You can wear my boots. She reached for the floor. Georgie noticed she was wearing a small engagement ring. You can have them. I don't even like them.
Absolutely not, Georgie said.
What if you get stuck in the snow? I'll be fine, she said. He'd carry me across the city before he let me get my feet wet. The boy grinned at the girl. The girl rolled her eyes again and finished pulling off her boots. Just take them, she said. He's got it in his head that you're our Christmas mission. If we don't help you, he'll never get his wings. Georgie took the boots. Knock off Uggs. They looked about her size. She kicked off her patent leather ballet flats, a birthday gift from Seth, so undoubtedly expensive. Seth always bought Georgie clothes for Christmas, usually to replace the most pathetic item in her wardrobe. Good thing he didn't know about her bras. You can have these, Georgie said, if you want them. The girl looked dubious.
We'll wait here for a while, the boy said. Come back if you need help.
Right, Georgie thought, putting on the boots. If my husband doesn't recognize me, if my in-laws don't live there anymore, if everyone I know is either dead or not born yet because I ruined time... Thank you.
Merry Christmas,
the boy said. Be careful, his fiancée warned. There might be ice. Thank you. Georgie swung her legs out of the truck and jumped onto the ground, catching the door as her feet slid out from beneath her. No one had shoveled yet on Rainwood Road. Georgie vaguely remembered that there weren't any sidewalks. She and Neil had walked in the street that time they went to get pizza, their hands swinging between them. The snow came up to the top of Georgie's calves. She had to lift her feet high to make any progress. Her ears and eyelids were freezing, but after a block of climbing, her cheeks were flushed, and she was panting. God, she'd never even been able to imagine this much cold before. How could people live someplace that so obviously didn't want them? All that romance about snow and seasons, you shouldn't have to make a special effort not to die every time you left your house. Everything was so quiet. Georgie's breath sounded thunderous. She looked back, but she couldn't see the red truck anymore. She couldn't see any signs of life. It was easy to imagine that every house she passed was empty. Georgie felt tears in her eyes and tried to pretend it was because of the cold or the fatigue and not because of what was waiting for her, or not waiting for her, at the top of the hill. Chapter 36. Neil grew up in a brick colonial house with a circular driveway. His mom was overly proud of it. The first time Georgie visited, a few months after they got engaged, His mom told her the driveway was one of the reasons they'd bought the house.
I don't get it, Georgie said later, after she'd snuck up from the basement to Neil's room and he'd shoved her up against the wall under his Eagle Scout certificate.
It's like there's a road in your front yard, she said. How is that a good thing?
Neil had huffed a smile into her ear, then pushed the neck of her pajamas open with his nose.
Georgie walked up the drive now, wrecking the postcard perfection of the snowy front yard with her tracks. She opened the storm door and knocked. The front door pushed open under her hand, because in Omaha, apparently, nobody even closed their front doors. Georgie could hear Christmas music and people talking. She knocked again, peeking into the house. When no one answered, she stepped cautiously into the foyer. The house smelled like apple cinnamon glade and pine needles.
Hello? Georgie said, too quietly. Her voice was shaking. She'd tracked in snow. She felt like she was breaking in.
She tried a bit louder.
Hello?
The door from the kitchen opened partway, and the music, "Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas," swelled. Neil stepped out, half a room away from her.
Neil.
Milk chocolate hair, pale skin, a red sweater she'd never seen before, a look on his face she'd never seen before, like he didn't know her at all. He stopped. The kitchen door swung to and fro behind him.
Neil,
Georgie whispered. His mouth was open. Lovely mouth. Lovely matching lips. Lovely dents like handholds for Georgie's teeth. His eyebrows were low and stern, and when he closed his jaw, there was a tense pulse in the corners of his cheeks.
Neil?
5 seconds passed. 10. 15. Neil, right there, in jeans and blue socks and a strange sweater. Was he happy to see her? Did he even know her? Neil? The door flew open behind them.
Daddy, Grandma says...
Alice walked into the room, and Georgie felt like someone had just kicked her in the back of the knees. Alice jumped, just like kids do in the movies, for joy.
Mommy!
She ran for Georgie. Georgie's phone slid out of her hand as she dropped to the floor.
Mommy!
Alice shouted again, landing in Georgie's arms.
Are you our Christmas present?
Georgie held Alice so tight it probably hurt and covered the side of the girl's face with kisses. Georgie didn't see the kitchen door open again, but she heard Numi squeal and meow, and then there were two of them in her arms, and Georgie was falling sideways off her knees, trying to hold on.
Missed you, she said between kisses, blinded by pink skin and yellow-brown hair. Missed you so much.
Alice pulled back, and Georgie tightened her arm around her, but Neil was lifting Alice up and away.
Daddy, Alice said, Mommy's here. Were you surprised?
Neil nodded and lifted Numi up too, setting them both aside. Numi meowed in protest. Neil held his hands out to Georgie, and she took them, so warm in her freezing fingers. He pulled her to her feet, then let go. He still wasn't smiling, so she didn't smile either. She knew she was crying, but tried to ignore it.
You're here, he said, without moving his lips.
Georgie nodded. Neil moved quickly, taking her face in his hands, one on her cold cheek, the other under her jaw, and pulling it into his. She felt relief blow through her like a ghost.
Neil.
Kneel, kneel, kneel.
Georgie touched his shoulders, then the back of his hair, still sharp, then the tips of his ears, rubbing them between her fingers and thumbs. She couldn't remember the last time they'd kissed like this. Maybe they'd never kissed like this, because neither of them had ever almost fallen off a cliff.
You're here, he said again.
And Georgie nodded, stepping forward just in case he was thinking of pulling away. She was here, and it didn't fix anything. It didn't change anything. She still had her job, and the meeting, maybe. She still had Seth to sort out, or not. Georgie hadn't made any real decisions. But for once, she'd made the right choice. She was here, with Neil, whatever that meant from now on. He kissed her, like he knew exactly who she was. He kissed her, like he'd been waiting for her for 15 years. Alice and Numi jumped on their parents' feet and hugged their legs. There was a dog in there somewhere, and Neil's mom talking about setting an extra plate at the table.
You're here, Neil said.
And Georgie held him by the ears so he couldn't pull away. She nodded. Before. Neil parked the Saturn in Georgie's driveway. He leaned forward and rested his head against the steering wheel. Christ, he was going to fall asleep. That would make a great Christmas surprise. Georgie knocking on his window later, asking him if he'd move his car. He bounced his head to the wheel. Come on, Neil, you can do this. She might say no, but at least you can ask the question. He tried not to think of the last time he'd asked this question, when he already knew Dawn would say yes, and he already knew he didn't want her to. Dawn would have said yes if he'd asked her again this week. He could tell by the way she'd been looking at him. Christ, he could see it. The wedding, the marriage, the rest of his life with Dawn. It would all be so pleasant and predictable. He didn't even have to live it to know the ending. He couldn't predict the next 10 minutes with Georgie, not ever, but especially not today. The next 10 minutes. She might say no. She'd been begging him to break up with her on the phone all week, but all she'd done was convince him that he couldn't. Even 1,500 miles away, even on the phone, Georgie was more alive than anything else in his life. He felt his cheeks warm just thinking about seeing her again. That's what Georgie did to him. She pulled the blood to the surface of his skin. She acted on him, tidally. She made him feel like things were happening, like life was happening. And even if he was miserable sometimes, he wasn't going to sleep through it. He ran his hand over his pocket. The ring was still there. It had been there since he left the nursing home. His great aunt had pressed it into Neil's hands.
I don't need this anymore. I never really needed it, but Harold liked to see it on my finger.
It was a family ring, she said. It should stay in the family. Neil made up his mind as soon as he saw it. The future was going to happen, even if he wasn't ready for it. Even if he was never ready for it. At least he could make sure he was with the right person. Wasn't that the point of life? To find someone to share it with? And if you got that part right, how far wrong could you go? If you were standing next to the person you loved more than everything else, wasn't everything else just scenery? Neil unbuckled his seatbelt. After. It doesn't look real.
What does it look like?
Like a very special Christmas episode. Neil's mouth was warm on the back of her neck.
A two-parter, he said, with some sort of Christmas Carol gimmick.
Exactly,
Georgie said. Or it's a wonderful life. Neil's mouth was warm and wet.
Are you cold, George Bailey?
No, she said.
You're shivering.
Not cold. He held her tighter anyway. It just falls like this? She asked.
Mm-hmm.
Even when no one's watching?
I think so, but I guess I can't prove it.
I can't believe I almost missed this.
But you didn't miss it, he said.
I almost did.
Don't. We've already been through it.
We haven't, she said. Not really.
We've been through it enough.
But Neil, I just really missed you.
Okay, but you can stop now. I'm right here. Stop missing me.
Okay. The snow kept falling, in slow motion.
I missed you too,
Neil said.
I missed you telling me.
Telling you what?
Everything. What you're thinking, what you're worried about, what you want for dinner.
You missed me saying that I feel like Tim Pooh Chicken again?
I don't miss you saying that. I just missed you saying, you know?
Maybe, she said.
Tell me something now, Georgie.
What?
Tell me what I missed,
he said, then squeezed her.
Are you sure you're not cold?
No.
You're still shivering.
She turned her head so she could see his face. Petunia had her puppies.
Yeah?
Yeah, my mom wasn't home, so I helped deliver them.
Jesus, really?
Yeah, and my sister's gay.
Heather?
I only have one sister. Maybe she's not gay, but she definitely has a girlfriend.
Huh.
Neil narrowed his eyes, then shook his head. What?
For a second, just nothing. Deja vu or something.
Georgie turned completely in his arms and took his face in her hands. There were snowflakes on his cheeks and nose and eyelashes. She wiped them away. Neil. He wrapped his arms tight around her waist again.
Don't, Georgie. We've been through it. Enough. For now.
It's just one more thing.
Okay. One more thing.
I'm going to be better.
We both are.
I'm going to try harder.
I believe you.
She held his face still and sank her eyes into his as deeply as she could. She tried to pour fire into them. From this day forward, Neil. Neil lowered his eyebrows tenderly, like he was untangling something that might fall apart in his hands. He opened his mouth to speak, but Georgie leaned in and stopped him. She couldn't help herself. His lips were right there. Neil's lips were always right there. That's one reason it was so frustrating when she felt like she wasn't allowed to kiss him. She kissed him now. He spread his fingers out against her ribs and let her push his head back. When Georgie jerked away, he made a noise like it hurt.
Come on, Georgie. No more one more things.
No, I just remembered. I have to call my mom.
You do?
Georgie pushed away from him, but he didn't let go. I have to call her. I never told her I was leaving. I just left. I disappeared.
So call her. Where's your phone?
It's dead. For good. Georgie reached her hands under Neil's coat, looking for his pockets. Where's your phone? He squirmed and dropped his arms.
Inside, dead. I was letting Alice play Tetris. Sorry.
Georgie turned to go inside, stomping the snow off her borrowed Ugg boots. It's okay, I'll just use the landline.
Just borrow my mom's phone, he said. She got rid of the landline.
Georgie stopped and looked back at him. She did?
Yeah, years ago, after my dad died.
Oh. Neil pulled his jacket tighter around her.
Come on, let's go inside. You're shivering.
I'm fine, Neil.
Good. Let's go be fine where it's warm.
She reached up and touched his face again. I almost, he whispered.
Enough, Georgie. You're here now. Be here now.
We hope you've enjoyed Landline, a Macmillan audiobook from St. Martin's Press. Text copyright 2014 by Rainbow Rowell. Production copyright 2014 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.